Hi everyone, good morning and welcome to Seek Sustainable Japan, our monthly sub-series, Short Takes. I'm JJ Walsh, your host here in Hiroshima, Japan, joined by...
Hi, I'm Tova Kinoko in Yokohama, Japan.
And it's great to connect again, Tova. It's getting warmer.
Yes, definitely feeling like summer's on the way, right? It's getting really sticky.
Absolutely, yeah. So one of my favorite products recently I got is this beautiful Wagasa, Japanese style umbrella. And it just has such a lovely design. It's all handmade, so it's still made in Japan, traditional style. Yeah. And it has wax on the paper. Hmm. So in theory, I could take it out in light rain. But yeah. I'm not risking it. But it's a wonderful sun umbrella, and yeah. I'm getting so many comments on it. I had a dermatologist on my tour the other day.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, any advice? What can I do? And he said, you're doing it. Carrying an umbrella is a wonderful way to cut UV rays and to stay cooler. And that was really nice to hear from a professional, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it makes such a difference. And it's funny because I think coming from the UK, I had such a bias against them when I first moved here, like almost 30 years ago. I was thinking, you know, umbrellas, sun umbrellas. Honestly, who uses those nowadays? It felt like some sort of Victorian thing that, you know, we'd long gone past. And so for years I was very skeptical of them. And then I think a couple of years ago I started using one because it was just getting so hot and I burn very easily. And so I was starting to use it. And then actually last year I ended up having skin cancer coming through it, luckily, the other side, touch wood. But since then, I'm like, no, I'm not taking risks. So the sun umbrella goes everywhere with me. And it does make such a difference. I mean, not only protecting the UV.
I find it really helps more than a hat because it keeps the hot sunshine further away from you. And so it does really keep you cooler. Yes. I would highly recommend it. So find yourself a beautiful made in Japan umbrella. And try it out, folks. It's getting hotter out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should be spreading this trend to the world. I mean, they're brilliant. They really
absolutely.
Do.
I actually take it when I go to Hawaii, and I used to be the only one using a sun umbrella, but now I'm in good company. There's a lot of people using it.
Yeah. Okay. Word's getting out.
Now you had an interesting event, or you have an interesting event coming up. Tell us about your online and also in-person event on June the 4th.
So June the 4th, we've got two events. So this first one is a webinar. So that's talking about management strategies in a nature positive era. So we're working there with Sam Sinclair, who's the co-founder of Biodiversify. So they're a UK-based biodiversity and nature consultancy working with some of the world's biggest brands on nature strategy. And the other, the host company and the other panelists from Neuromagic. So Japan-based sort of boutique consultancy working on the sort of UX side, user experience side of how do you build sustainability into your narrative and sort of design so that it makes it easier for people to get on board with sustainability. So, and then I'm of course coming from the people transformation side, the organizational culture and leadership side on that. So we'll be coming at sort of how do you build nature positive into business as usual, but from different angles. So I'm really looking forward to that discussion. It's going to be bilingual in English and Japanese. So that should be fun as well. And then the second one that evening is an in-person event, part of a series called Changemakers Unplugged. And I think this was originally between Impact Hub and Google Startups. Now Impact Hub have taken over it fully. And so we've got Yuko Mishio, who's the CEO of Impact Hub, and Chris Clayton, who is also one of their sort of key staff there. We're having this conversation about what does it really mean when we say impact, because everyone talks about having impact, everyone wants to have hopefully positive impact, we see the word everywhere, but actually what does it mean? How do you know you're having an impact with your work So we had a prep call last week, and I think we talked for an hour then easily. And so I think it's going to be a challenge keeping to the time, but that'll be in person, so we can do Q&A. We'd love to sort of hear the audience's ideas on that as well. So that's in Meguro Impact Hub on the evening of the 4th of June.
That sounds amazing. Anyone in Tokyo, you can still sign up and go. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I was really excited about a new collaboration this month that I saw. Hi. A partnership between Hachidori Denyoku, which is a sourcing of renewable energy from wherever you are. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to have your own roof to have solar panels. Wherever you are in Japan, you can source through Hachidori Denyoku, which means electric, and get renewable energy. Yeah. And you're still supporting renewable energy. And they've got a great tie-up with one of our favorite companies, Maimizu.
Fantastic.
And so this month, if you sign up with Hachidori Denyoku and Maimizu, and then if you go out in the wild, like I did, and you hashtag them on social media, so this is my refill at Hiroshima Peace Park Memorial Museum. It's the only chilled water refill area that you can get in the Peace Park, and is becoming more and more of a concern. Sometimes we don't have enough water refill places. Yeah. Even all the vending machines are sold out of water on hot days, right?
Yeah.
So we really need more of these, especially chilled in hot weather water refill stations. Mm-hmm. And so if you just hashtag them on social media, you get a discount off your electric bill this month. So it's a really nice collaboration.
Good. Yeah, that's such a great sort of incentive to people, right? To do this good thing, which benefits us and the planet as well. Very cool.
Absolutely. And it was so nice to see Hachidori Denyoku did a wonderful interview with Mariko McTeer, who is the co-founder of Maimizu. So that's on their YouTube channel. It's just so nice to see ethical, sustainable-focused companies doing good together.
Yeah,
we know that can have more impact, right?
Very much, very much. No, it's fantastic.
Now, you met up with some business leaders on May 20th and talked about the bees. Tell us what you talked about.
Well, it was kind of funny because we've been planning this nature meetup, again, with Biodiversify, this consultancy. They're just sort of coming into Japan now. And it happened to be that we organized it on World Bee Day, which I didn't realize until after we'd actually set the date. But it was a very happy coincidence because obviously, you know, bees are pretty important. Some of the statistics I think I found on the UN Food and Agriculture Organization website are pollinators contribute to 35% of the world's total crop production, supporting 87 of the 115 leading food crops. So that's fruits, vegetables, seeds, nuts, etc. All the things that we eat every day, all the time. Without bees, they would not be there. So I think a lot of us don't really realize, we see them buzzing around, we know, you know, bees and honey, but really the critical role they play, we don't necessarily understand that enough. So there's a great article. If you go to that website, there's loads of sort of information, very easy to sort of understand information there. And also some ideas on, okay, well, how can you be more conscious of this? How can you help bees? Things like avoiding sort of using any pesticides if you're sort of growing stuff yourself, thinking about what kind of food you're buying, choosing organic, for example. So to encourage and support farmers who are trying to be a more sort of nature positive or take a more nature positive approach. Things like choosing the products you use, the things you put in your skin so that you're not washing chemicals into the water system, which then start to, you know, go into the earth and into become toxic for the insects.
Even you choosing more natural laundry detergents, household cleaners, all of that is connected, right?
Yeah, very much, very much. So I think it's really something we need to understand more very urgently. And it was great because we had this
growing flowers in your around your house.
Exactly.
To support the pollinators, right?
Yeah. So I've got I've sort of moved into a new place last month. I haven't got much space to grow stuff, but there's a few little sort of bits of earth around the edge of the house. So I just bought some wildflower seeds, and I'm just scattering them around. So, I mean, it's not enough space to grow vegetables or beautiful big bushes or anything, but I can grow wildflowers, and that helps the bees. So, or, you know, a pot on your thing with some lavender or something, which they love. You know, these things we can do pretty easily, I think. So, yeah, that's worth doing. But we had a really great discussion. We had two pharmaceutical companies, head of sustainability from two rival pharmaceutical companies, actually join the discussion in the evening, plus the sustainability lead from a big luxury brand group, and another one from a consulting company. And so we had a few different sort of perspectives kind of represented there that evening. It was really interesting to hear what their companies connection to nature is, what they're doing around that, what they prioritize. So it'd be great to hear more companies having this kind of conversation. And, you know, we're all connected to it, directly or indirectly. So I think it's, yeah, we need more space for these conversations to build understanding and then drive action.
Absolutely. And couldn't we add more understanding about bees in education?
Yes.
Right? Getting the kids in Japan, they have this wonderful nature-based education where the kids go out and collect bugs and beetles and insects and get out and see what's growing in the trees and stuff. So talking about how we can change the way we live our lives to be more bee-friendly would be great to get young kids talking about it, right?
Yeah, because I think that's the missing link, right? Like you say, they've got the education about, you know, these are the creatures and here's what they do in nature. And then there's our lives. And they're not necessarily linking those things so that the kids don't come home and go, oh, well, I need to do that differently or make different choices about what I buy or what I eat. That link doesn't seem to yet be happening. So it'd be really great to see more education on that.
And you have a young child, so you often see what they're being taught at school and how things you talk about sometimes maybe not as connected as they could be. Maybe.
Exactly. So it's really good that they cover these topics, I think. And he'd recently just finished, so my son's 10 and recently just finished a unit at school that they were doing called, what was it, Sharing the Planet. So there they were looking at how do we share the planet with other cultures, other humans, but also with other species, and sort of going out and learning about our sort of interconnections with these. So it was getting better, but I think they could still go a lot deeper on that because it's so important. It informs, you know, every decision we make, to what we eat, to what we wear, to how we travel. So we need to know.
Mm-hmm. And I went this month and I talked with Thomas Klepfer, who's a local organic no-till farmer on my show. And then I went and visited his farm and, we ate some okonomiyaki. We're going to talk about that next. but he does animals as well. So he's talking about using the sheep wool in different parts of the farm as a way to dampen the weeds, right?
Oh,
but also
brilliant.
He does wool shearing workshops with local people. So teaching local people who come to the farm, not only about organic farming, the importance of not using chemicals, but also how to take care of the animals and how to use the wool and things that come from the animals effectively, but also ethically for the animals as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, you've got a great summer experience for kids coming up, the Atlantic Pacific Summer Camp in Japan. You can apply now for this is in July, right?
So this one's in July. There's actually the spring camp is happening right now. And my daughter's actually up in Kamaishi, the place you see in the picture there, this week. Doing the spring camp and then the summer camp, will be open in July. Highly recommend
it
this.
It's so beautiful.
Brilliant. So Kamaishi, the area where the camp is based, this is a little village in Tohoku, in Iwate, that was completely decimated by the 2011 tsunami. Basically, it just flattened the entire village. They lost a lot of people. Of course, all the infrastructure, but, you know, obviously people being the most impactful part. And they had to really rethink when they were sort of rebuilding afterwards, how do we want this to look? And they've moved the entire village further up the hill so that it's away from the sort of the sea level. And where the village was is now playing fields, which if they flood, not too much of an issue. But they were really intentional in the way that they redesigned the community there after the disaster. And they were also really intentional about people need to learn from our experience about urban design, about communities, about disaster preparedness, about how we live with the sea and the surrounding areas. And so the camp, they work with them on areas like water safety. So they go out with highly trained sort of ocean rescue specialists and learn about sort of ocean rescue techniques and things. And then they also speak to the local residents and hear about sort of their stories from the tsunami, but also how they've rebuilt, what they learned from that. It's incredibly powerful. And then they've got a whole ocean conservation aspect to it as well. So they collaborate with this company called Precious Plastics. So they're collecting sort of plastic trash that they find on the beach. They're then using it in these clever machines that this company makes to make different products. And the kids can actually just make something simple like a coaster or whatever, but they're seeing how it can be reused to make something useful that it's not necessarily waste if you look at it in a different way. And they're kids from all over the world, so it's really
fun. But you
can
only do that once. Let's just add that little caveat
there. Yeah.
It is not recyclable as we have for aluminum and paper and glass. So let's keep that in mind, that it's not something we want to use more of.
Definitely not. But if we've got it already, let's not make new stuff. Let's not throw it away. Let's actually use it in a way which is useful and has a purpose. But I think also it's just, you know, that plastic thing is just a sort of an example, I guess, of rethinking how we look at waste, how we look at products. But also they talk about what is the impact of this when we're finding it on the beach, and how does that impact the local ecology and the creatures and the environment, so on. So it's a brilliant camp. It's a lot of fun. They'll have an amazing time, but it's also really, really educational as well. So highly
That's
recommend
awesome.
That.
We had a great question from Jen on Facebook. Thanks for joining. Is there a link for the camp? I did add the links. If it's not coming through, if you Google AtlanticPacific.org and then Atlantic Pacific in Japan, something like that, you'll find it. But it's basically www.AtlanticPacific.org is the URL.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, I showed the teaser of the Okonomiyaki, so I have to talk about it now. So it's a wonderful new place that just opened. Anyone who does the Shimonami Kaido cycling route, as you're going across the water from Onomichi to Mukaishima, the opposite island, and that's also where Thomas's farm is. There's a wonderful new vegan okonomiyaki place, and they are just going above and beyond. Wow. I tell you, this okonomiyaki is so delicious. It is made like traditional okonomiyaki, but without any eggs or meat or fish or anything. So he's using a lot of vegan mayo as the sauce, and lots of veggies inside, noodles. And then cooked on the hot plate beautifully. Yep. And then also adding avocado, which has a wonderful, nice contrast with okonomiyaki. So definitely seek out Okonomiyaki Tessa, which is right near the port when you get off that short ferry. Yeah. And they also have this gratin. It's like a potato vegan cheese grilled on the teppan. I tell you. It's very exciting.
You're making me hungry now.
I did have the most disappointing Hiroshima okonomiyaki at one of the most touristy places recently. And it's one of those places, they're always going to be busy. So they don't need to change as much, right?
Right.
And they say, oh, we're not going to offer any different sauces, even though the sauce has pork in it. As well as seafood. And there's a lot of visitors who especially don't eat pork in addition to vegan, vegetarian, halal, right? So they're really missing out on a lot of people. And So that was really disappointing. So this was a wonderful contrast to find this really tiny little traditional place, and they're just raising the game, right? Going next level.
Good for them. Good for them.
Yeah. Oh,
that looks good. I'm hungry now.
So good. I just made everybody really hungry.
Yep.
Now, you came across a wonderful new initiative called Cozy and Wild. Tell us about this.
Yes. So my good friend Taisuke Yokota, for many years, has been importing bell tents. So these traditional tent you can see in the illustration there, sort of, I think they came from the UK military originally, or expeditions, polar expeditions and things. So they're very solid canvas, old style tents, but they're really kind of quite cool as well. And he's been importing those into Japan for years. And he's now got this partnership with the Japan National Parks, whereby he can create bespoke tours for you. If you're visiting Japan and you want to do something different, not go to the super busy, crowded sort of cities and things, contact Taisuke. And I think you can find them on Instagram at the moment. I'm sure he's got a website in the works. But they can then say, okay, well, which national park do you want to go to? And you can look on the Japan National Parks sort of website to see what the options are. And then he can create a sort of bespoke camping or glamping experience for you in those parks. So really, I mean, he's always out in nature. That's very much his thing. And so Camping with Soul, his company, are sort of collaborating now to bring something really quite different. So I think that's something that we could see more of, right? Sort of off the track, off the beaten track, sort of experiences, because Japan has so much beautiful nature. It's amazing. And often it's hard to access, but if you've got someone who can help you sort of get there and find a place to, you know, to stay and do all of that, then yeah, brilliant.
And I'm finding it, my time in my life, I'm a little bit less willing to sleep on the ground and be too hot. So if it's a nicer tent, if it's a little bit nicer experience, it appeals so much more to me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm way past wanting to do the whole sort of slumming it camping things. Taisuke's tents are very nice. It's definitely glamping, not just your sort of your basic standard camping. So
that's awesome. That's so good. Yeah, it sounds lovely. I had the chance to talk with Rick Grihan of Image Mill recently, and it was so exciting to hear about his new project out in the countryside, renovating an old Minka house, traditional Japanese house, but also how he's trying to revive the old tea plantation that was there. There's a lot of history in that area, including in the house for the old silk farming. So he has some of the interesting silk vats and things. How he's working on recreating this house, not just to have a guest house or something, to make it into an education and experience hub.
Yeah.
It's only just over an hour from Tokyo. So for people to be able to go out and be a part of a creative hub out there in the middle of beautiful nature. And he's got all these ideas about how to make it self-sufficient, growing vegetables, but even reusing some of the wastewater into the gardens, into the filtration systems. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, something that can be applied in lots of different experiences, even in the cities. Now there are strategies there. So he's doing a crowdfunding right now. I would highly recommend people have a look at the crowdfunding. It's in English and Japanese, and definitely support them. It's only for this month. It's 120-year-old house that they're trying to renovate. Very expensive. A lot of these things become right. Because he really wants to do it in the traditional way.
Yeah.
And bring back the building into, you know, using local craftspeople, bring it back, all that beautiful artisanship and craftsmanship, which is often lost in new houses, right?
Yeah.
Highly recommend people check that out and try to donate, get them to their 5 million yen mark. So,
yes. Yeah. Oh, it's such a great project. And yes, like you say, so many things get lost, but there's so much value in the wisdom of how things were made and built, and created. So it's wonderful to see them making efforts to preserve that.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of these crowdfunding for the Satoyama, they call it, for Image Mill. A lot of the crowdfunding, it's a high hope aim, right? And even if you don't get to that, some of them, they have to give it all back. And then some, they can take what they get. But crowdfunding is always challenging, right?
Yeah.
You've probably met lots of people who are doing that.
I know, yes, plenty of people who are trying to do it. And it's so hit and miss, I think, right? Because some, all of a sudden, they hit the targets in a day or two and you're there and you're off. If somebody happens to share it and you hit the right chord, others, there are some really great projects that really struggle to get traction. So, yeah, it's definitely a gamble, but worth a try.
Yeah. Now, Jen has a great question about the camping. Are there poisonous snakes, ticks, mosquitoes, asking from Canada in the throes of mosquito season? I read a really interesting article about how some species of mosquitoes might also be pollinators. Like, there's a lot about mosquitoes we don't know. Anyway, sorry, that just flipped it off in my mind, something I read. But in these glamping tents, ways to get around all the insects. Did you notice?
Well, I guess what we'd use, I mean, I haven't done it myself yet. And I mean, yes, in Japan, we have things, nothing like as poisonous as I think there are in various parts of North or South America or other regions, nothing like the scary things you might find in Australia, for example. So yes, there are some snakes that are poisonous, but they're nothing like that level. And they tend to keep out of your way. Mosquitoes are annoying, but in Japan we have these wonderful katorisenko things, right? And I recently bought a little portable kind of metal katorisenko case, which is like a kind of insect repellent incense.
You see all the gardeners using that. They walk around with it, right?
Yeah, you can just clip it on your the corner of your bag or your belt or whatever. And it's sort of insulated, sort of, so it's not going to make you hot and obviously not going to burn or anything. And it just sort of releases this not quite nice smelling sort of incense, which repels the bugs. So those, if you've got one of those around you, and I'm sure Daisuke will have all of that prepared, then it's not too much of an issue. I guess it's part of the outdoors. We just have to get used to, right? It's their world too. They have a role in the ecosystem. It's something we have to learn to live with, annoying as it is.
Absolutely. Katorisenko has such a long history in Japan. It's a really interesting company, right?
Yeah, I don't know much about the background. You probably know more than me, but it's
why I want to dive into it more, because I just read something briefly the other day. But yeah, maybe for the next episode, I'll have some updates on Katorisenko. Now, this month I have been driving a new car. I have had a chance to take my new Honda all-electric Insight out on the road, and I'll tell you some of the things I really like. Can you see in this photo how at the top, as you're driving on the window, it has the speed limit?
Okay. Yes.
It's displayed just for the driver as an extra safety thing. So you don't have to look down to the dashboard. It displays it on the window. And I'm finding this so useful.
Yeah.
Because it tells me how fast I'm going. It tells me the local speed limit, which sometimes it's really unclear.
Yeah.
And so it's a very safe, wonderful car to drive, as most electric cars are. It has wonderful pickup. I had a Lamborghini next to me the other day, totally dropped him at the light. And I, I'm a middle-aged woman. You're in a really hot, expensive car, but nope, faster than you.
I love it. Your competitive spirit coming out there.
It's so good. This is the front display, so it has a really nice big display. Mm-hmm. It has some really interesting features. For example, you can change the LED lights inside, which at night, you can make it really comfortable, depending on what kind of color scheme. It has some interesting gimmicky things, which I haven't tried yet. Like, you can actually change the aromatherapy in the car. You can add little cartridges, so I have to report on that at a future episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, very happy with it. Highly recommend any Japanese cars are really coming out with great electric cars right now. So yes, definitely go have a test drive. Once you drive these, it'll be hard to go back.
Brilliant. Love it.
Well, that is our time. Is there anything we haven't touched on for you, Tova?
I think
we've talked about everything, right?
I think we got everything. Yeah, we did. Brilliant. Yeah.
Hey, Jen, it's great to have your comments. I see your laughing face. That's wonderful. Wonderful. Also, if you're watching this on replay, make sure to ask your questions and comments below. Tova and I will definitely reply. Thanks, everyone, for joining. We'll see you next month. Thanks, Tova.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thanks.